I don't think that we have seen it highlighted as we have.
You know how many billionaires are probably doing stuff like this that we don't know about?
Look, there was sex, drugs, and rock and roll going on in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
But it shows you how people have created their own narratives.
I think white celebrities, they get the benefit of the doubt.
If this wasn't Diddy, there certainly would not be a federal prosecution.
And when you see Snatch's girl in the room, you mind your business.
Let's say Diddy is found not guilty.
Did any of that really happen?
This is the United States of America versus Sean Combs. They're not looking to lose this case.
What's up, everyone? I am your girl, Ra Ali, and you are joining us for another episode of Cited. Today, we have a very special segment for you guys. It's a roundtable discussion, and I want to welcome our special roundtable episode guest. I'm joined today by some powerful voices with very different takes on what's happening around the Diddy trial and everything that is being brought to light. You can catch the full episodes wherever you get podcasts, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, but make sure you follow us on socials at @its_onsite. Now today, we're not just talking about Diddy. We're talking about how power, celebrity, and culture can collide. We're going to get into the double standards within relationships, as well as why some women are dismissed because of who they date, and whether money and fame shield bad behavior. This isn't about gossip. This is about having a necessary conversation. Now, let me introduce you all to who's at the table, because every single one of them brings a different lens to this story. I am joined by the one and only high-profile criminal attorney from New York, my home place, Mr. James Leonard. He is nationally recognized as a criminal defense attorney with over 25 years in the game. From cartel leaders and mob figures to Grammy winners, reality stars, he has defended them all. He's sharp, he's fearless, and he knows exactly how fame, power, and the justice system really works. To my left, we have Arielle Jenkins, better known online as Arielle Vontel. She breaks down pop culture with humor, heart, and a whole lot of honesty. Joining us all the way from the West Coast is the amazing Samson Crouppen, or you may know him as Secret Service Sam. He's been following the Diddy trial in real time from inside of the courtroom, blending legal facts with sharp personal commentary. His viral videos break it all down in a way that's smart, clear, but still very entertaining. Silver Bands, my girl, who's right over to my right, is a Miami-based dancer, model, and an influencer who speaks openly about her firsthand experiences navigating in the industry, as well as managing a public perception. Now, y'all see why this roundtable is a perfect mix for a conversation like this? We've got legal insight, online energy, real-life experience, and the people who are not afraid to say what needs to be said. So before we jump into the deeper stuff, we are going to loosen things up a bit with some quick fire questions just to hear what everyone has to say. Arielle, my girl, please take it away.
Okay, so if this wasn't Diddy, would anyone really care this much?
To be honest with you, yes. I want to know everything that's going on in anybody basement, anybody backyard, anybody attic, okay? So if you know about it, call me, because I want to know. So, yeah.
Samson, what do you think?
I don't
think
anybody would care, no. I think the fact that it's Diddy, he's been so much a part of all of our lives with music, entertainment, all the performers and entertainers that he was part of, the sex, drugs, rock and roll. I mean, there's so much to it that if this was just some other regular, you know how many billionaires are probably doing stuff like this that we don't know about?
Right. Jay, what do you think?
I'll answer it from a legal perspective. If this wasn't Diddy, there certainly would not be a federal prosecution.
That part.
I agree. Yeah. I absolutely agree. I agree that it might be interesting. As Silver was saying, it might be tea, within, you know, the streets, or it might be something that if it was even a public figure and not a man of the caliber of Diddy, such a high profile person, it might be internet or blog gossip, word on the street, but it certainly wouldn't be, I don't believe, a federal indictment. I don't feel like for you guys, give me your opinion. I don't feel like we've seen any of these cases, whether it's the sex trafficking or any of the Me Too situations, which we all take very seriously, is nothing to take lightly. I don't think that we have seen it highlighted as we have when it's been recognizable names. James, you could give more insight on that. Is this actually something that's taking place?
I think it's been sensationalized because of who Diddy is, and he's a high-profile individual. I also think that the allegations are extremely salacious and have become, you know, internet memes and clickbait and all the commentary regarding the baby oil. This is like way over the top. And I think this is outside of what we've seen with those other matters that you previously discussed. It's very salacious, and it's certainly captivated people's attention.
Well, the biggest thing I even learned was that the baby oil wasn't spiked. You know, and I made a No Diddy song. I made a No Diddy song music video, and I end it with saying, if it makes your blood boil that he spiked the oil, No Diddy. And he didn't spike the oil. You know, I think we all thought that you put on the oil unknowing that it's spiked with GHP, and then you go into this euphoric state and you do anything he says, and that would be against your will. But all the testimony we've heard is people taking, you know, taking the drugs willingly and knowingly. So it's interesting, just the baby oil alone we were lied to about. So you have to really be able to separate the fairy tale from what factually happened. Where are all the celebrity freak off tapes? Where is J-Lo in a room with an underage person? And where are all these salacious things? Meek Mill, French Montana. Where are all these, we thought there were videos of Diddy having his way with other men and blackmailing them. Where are these videos?
And it's funny you mentioned that. Before Ariel even asks what her next question is from the quickfire questions, because we're keeping it real here in this conversation. Ariel is a huge personality. She has a comedic tone, but there were a number of things pertaining to the trial that she thought actually took place. She, before we started recording, she says, you know, and I think it's, you know, it's so crazy that Meek Mill and, you know, Diddy had this sexual relationship. And I said, when? And she's like, it's all over social media. She says, you haven't heard it? And I said, no, I didn't hear it. And she played audio for me. And it absolutely is not something that is a part of the trial and it's not real, but it shows you how people have created their own narratives. And if you are not completely locked in from what's real and what's not, he is actually being, at this moment, being penalized for a domestic, which is unacceptable, of course. We're not making any excuses for domestic violence, but for the domestic as well as rumors.
Right.
You know, and a lot of just like talk and entertainment, which is unbelievable. I want to hear so much more about what James thinks about all of this. But what's the next question, Ariel? I'm sorry.
Okay. What's something about this case that made you look at the industry differently? And I want to ask that to Silver, being that you are an entertainer. Like, what do you think?
I feel like so many people knew what was going on with Cassidy, but didn't say nothing. And because, like, I've been in a room with a very strong man. And when you see Snatch's girl in the room, you mind your business, because that's just how the room goes. But when you expect that it's so much more of a high caliber of a room, you would think that it would be other strong energies that would, you know, maybe step in or something. And people just slid to the side and hit off. And I really didn't think that it was like really that much going on in the situation.
Very, very interesting point. Something that I guess I'm personally surprised about the industry, having been someone who worked in this industry in the beginning of my career is the disloyalty. I'm not saying that anybody's supposed to stand behind behavior that they don't believe in or respect. But there's so many people that over the years you saw side by side, so many people over the years that were at the parties, and I'm not talking about anything sexual. I'm talking about just people who shared in good times with Diddy, people who have been there for the ride while it was good. And it's so interesting to see how when the water gets a little hot and shit turns up, and this is actually, the water is very hot, it's burning, people are out of there. They won't show up to support you at your court case. All you have is your family at the end of the day. So I think it's a really good point to make people remember, like, when shit hits the fan, whether you're wrong or you're not, let's say Diddy is found not guilty. Where is everyone that was turned up and celebrating and at the brunches and, you know, celebrating New Year's Eve together? Where are your friends?
But honestly, though, speaking, when it comes to somebody that's dealing with domestic violence and as a friend of someone that's getting abused, it's like you're in a tough spot, because do you help your friend or do you just say, okay, I'm just going to be here when you're ready to leave? Because 9 times out of 10, you helping your friend, usually you're going to be the one that get hurt because you're helping your friend. That friend going to still be there. They can do something to you because you're trying to be that friend.
No, but I'm talking about Diddy in terms of his case. Like, where are all his friends in the courtroom?
Why would they be in there? This is a high-profile case. I don't want my name attached to nothing.
But then you shouldn't. Then you don't call yourself a friend.
That is true.
And don't make it so that you haven't missed one single function that he's had in the past 20 years.
Right. What if they was on crack? Everybody was on drugs. They don't know. They don't remember. Everybody was high.
No, everybody
James,
was high.
Everybody was high.
James,
what I'm going to say is it basically pulls the curtain back, that there's no authenticity in that industry. Everybody's looking out for themselves. When it's good, they're there. When it's bad, they're nowhere to be found. And it's not real. You know, Hollywood is not real. It's a perception that we all have. And I think this is pulling the curtain back on that. We're talking about, this is the hip hop industry, Hollywood, whatever. It's all the same. That's not real life. And I think we're seeing that here.
Yeah. Absolutely, James. Absolutely. Would you say, Samson?
Well, I was just thinking, I had an example. I was in line the other day. You know, we get in line at like 4:45 a.m. to get into the courtroom. That's how early you have to line up. Because I was paying a line sitter, but I stopped doing it. But there was one of the line sitters who was just this awful guy. He was in a tent, got out of a tent. He was maybe allegedly, there was some diddying happening with two women and himself in the tent. He gets out of the tent and starts yelling at these women and degrading this one woman in front of all of us, in front of, as a matter of fact, a lot of women from most of the top media outlets in the country. And
is this outside the courtroom, the courthouse?
Yeah, where the line is to get into the courtroom. And the reason I bring this up is because this guy yelled at this woman. I said a little something, but I also quickly realized that this guy could be violent as well. So I was a little scared to really speak up how I wanted. And it made me think of Diddy. This is like some homeless line sitter guy, basically, who's yelling at this woman and none of us are saying a thing. And I think to your point, I think it was Silver, you said that, how a strong man takes his woman and does this and everybody, we just look the other way. And I think that's the type of behavior we need to do away with. We need to say something when men act like this in public, but with the kind of power and money Diddy had, it was limitless.
But you know, that's a very great point, but it's also a thin line, right? Because I've read myself a number of times in different articles and seen different news clips where someone tried to intervene in a situation, be it between a man and a woman or a woman and a woman, and they were actually injured. And not personally, but I've seen in situations where people have intervened and they've actually been killed.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And the other person is fine. Mm-hmm. I think that you can't, it's challenging, but you also cannot compare it to people who have so much to say, right, about it, but they stayed showing up to celebrate. So you can see that something is going on that you don't agree with. And if I go to my girlfriend's house and I see that her boyfriend or her husband or her fiance or the father of her children is abusing her, guess who's not going back to her house? I'm not going to come back here and be like, what we drinking today, y'all? You know, where we going to dinner? What's the tea? Like, I'm not going to put myself in a situation to celebrate this person that I disagree with and wait until he kills her. And now I'm just so disgusted. I just think that that is the part that I feel so much confusion about, because it's like, where do you people stand? He's on trial, right? Yes. But what about everyone else that just was going about their way, that was at every function, because everybody knows Diddy throws some great parties. Disregard the whole freak off for a moment. For people just in general, you went to parties, I went to parties that Diddy had, and you didn't see anybody having sex. So every party was not like that. Well, you know what I mean? And everyone was having a great time.
And I think you almost have to clarify too. Everybody says, oh, I left before the freak offs. The only freak-offs that we know about for a fact is Diddy in his own personal time in his hotel room with a male escort and either Cassie or this Jane Doe. But so even to talk about these freak-offs, you can't even really talk about it anymore, because did any of that really happen? Were, you know, everybody says, I left before that, but did they? Was there nothing to leave before? You know, and I think that's the thing where we need to get down to, were these huge celebrity sex parties with tunnels and everything, Ali Carter's and Jaguar Wright? Like, what is real? There's no mention of any of that.
You're physically there. So, you know, if it was to be said, it would have been said. There's no place else better than in the courtroom.
That's what
no.
we're waiting for. You know, we all this built up, and I was part of building up a lot of this rumor mill and stuff. And like you said, the Meek Mill, there's a video of me like, yeah, you put that work in, daddy. Yeah, daddy. And he's like, and Meek Mill's in the pool and he looks like he took it.
Man, you doing it, man. You deserve it, daddy. You putting in that work. Proud of you. I love you.
But there's no proof. Like you said, there's videos or audio of LeBron and da 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 da. Where is this? There's nothing has been said of him having sex with another man in this trial. It has only been said that he liked to look and say, is this a kind of man you like? He liked to watch another man have sex with his girl, but he never participated with that man.
If I may, if I can ask a question of Samson. Samson is in a very unique position where he's been inside the courtroom, and he has actually been in a position to observe not just Diddy, not the lawyers, or the witnesses, but actually the 12 most important people in this entire trial, and that is the jury. I did a little research. My understanding is that there's 8 men and 4 women on the jury. They said the average age is somewhere around 52. But Samson, when you're in the courtroom and they're listening to this testimony, and some of it's very graphic and salacious, what do you observe? How are they reacting? Do they seem to be sympathetic towards the witnesses? Or do they seem to be turned off by the witnesses or what they're hearing? That's the most important thing here. What do you see with those 12 people, the jurors?
Well, what's interesting, there's 12 juries, but there's also 6 alternates. So there, what's my math on that? Is that 16 or no? How many? My math's bad.
But 18.
18. Sorry. Yeah. So there's 18 total in there. And to be honest, they're kind of poker facing it a lot. You're not really seeing a lot of, oh my God, or any like this or emotion. Like you heard the judge reprimanded Diddy yesterday, because Diddy, like when she was on, he would scoot back out of his chair and, you know, he was doing a lot of this kind of shaking his head, and the judge had to tell him, knock it off. It's hard to tell so much how the jury feels about a witness, but the feeling in the courtroom, like for example, when Miss Westmoreland was cross-examining Brianna Bonglin, and she said, you said there was an incident where Puffy grabbed both your breasts and squeezed them so hard that there was bruising. But now that was not true. That was a lie that I guess somehow was made up by her lawyer, Tyrone, I forget his last name. And so it's interesting, after she admitted to lying about that, and then she said, well, why did you keep it in your civil lawsuit if you knew it was a lie? And she said, I don't recall, I don't remember. So the feeling in the room and coming out, a lot of people are like, did the balcony thing happen? Because Cassie says she kind of saw it. You know, there's text messages that kind of allege that maybe she saw it, but that maybe she was told about it. I believe the balcony incident happened, but I will tell you the feeling in that courtroom was doubtful of her testimony after they found that out.
And it needs to be James without reasonable doubt, right? You can't go off of something off of just saying it sounds like it might be true, correct?
It's got to be beyond a reasonable doubt. And, you know, it's to use like a baseball analogy in baseball. And this is a good analogy and it makes sense here in this trial. We're all familiar with the game of baseball. And if you hit the ball over the fence and it's a home run and it looks great and everybody knows what that is. But in order for it to count as a home run, the hitter, the batter, has to actually run around and touch each base, including home plate. It's very similar in a criminal courtroom. The prosecutor has to hit every element of every count of the indictment. And if they miss a count, if they don't prove everything beyond a reasonable doubt, the jury is instructed by the judge that they have to find the defendant not guilty. And it has to be all 12 jurors. It has to be unanimous. So this is a very heavy burden for the government. The government does have a high success rate in these federal prosecutions, upwards of 98%. And don't forget, this is the United States of America versus Sean Combs. That's the same United States of America that prints their own money, fights world wars, is the biggest power on the planet, and they are fighting against Sean Combs and his lawyers. None of us would want those odds, right? But nonetheless, the government has to prove each and every element of every crime charged in the indictment. And that's in essence what this is all about.
James, do you have it in front of you, the charges are?
Yeah, I actually have the indictment right here, yes.
Okay, can you incorporate that into what you're saying?
Yes, so he is charged with racketeering conspiracy. He's charged with sex trafficking by force, fraud, or coercion. He's charged with transportation to engage in prostitution. Those are the three counts of the indictment.
And one thing I left out about Brianna, which really left everybody a bombshell, was the picture she had of the bruising on her leg. And the picture looked, it was about the size of a softball. It really looked like a basketball. It was very deep bruising. And the metadata on her phone was September 26th. But Miss Westmoreland showed that Diddy was playing a tribute concert in New Jersey on September 26th. So she said, let me ask you this. How can a person be in two places at the same time? And she goes, no further questions. So that was a very part, like, okay, she took this picture supposedly on the day that it happened, but Diddy was out of town on that day. And the metadata on your phone doesn't lie. So either is she mistaken about that she took the picture a day or two after the incident? And further, she went to a private party with Diddy, had a neck brace on, took a picture, took it off, partied with him all night, did a 8-hour ketamine trip with him when the lawyer, Miss Westmoreland, is like, so this guy just dangled you over a balcony a week ago, but you're partying with him and you're not terrified to be around him. So all of that
that's crazy.
All like, God, where do you go?
I want to know, I have a question. What is it about this case or indictment that allows for some people to have to reveal who they are and another person to be able to go under the Jane Doe alias? What is that about?
So there is a great deal of protection for victims of sexual abuse, as there should be, to protect their identity, because it would prevent a lot of women, men, whoever, you know, victims in general, from coming forward with their identities being revealed. So in essence, it's an application that's made by that individual or by that individual's attorney or representative that they would like to remain anonymous, and therefore they get that protection. Unfortunately for Cassie, she was somebody that was, you know, out there in the media. She filed a civil suit. That video, that horrific video of them in the hotel where, you know, he beat her, that was out there. So her identity, in essence, was not protected. But some of these other witnesses, this Jane Doe that testified this week, her identity was protected because that's what she asked for. And there are, you know, the victims have rights, as they should. The victims, you know, are entitled to protections under the law, as is the defendant. He's entitled to confront these individuals. You and I just don't need to know their names.
Do you think that we are dealing with a case where, because victims are protected, that in some cases, and I want to reiterate, that in some cases, because they are, their identity is protected, there are people that have come forth in situations where it's a money grab, and they know that whether they lose for being dishonest or not, they won't be, their identity won't be revealed, so they're not exposed and they're able to hide behind that. Is that happening at all in these cases? Not to say in this one, but is that something that we're dealing with as a society?
I think the answer to that is yes, as particularly in the civil side. In the criminal side, you know, prosecutors are evaluating the credibility of these victims and their stories, and if there's any evidence that corroborates what they're saying. And if they can't make out probable cause, and again, we're talking here about a federal prosecution. This is being prosecuted by the Southern District of New York. The approval for this comes from the Department of Justice in Washington. This is not some small prosecutor's office in, you know, some rural community. This is coming from Washington, where they approved these charges, this indictment. And I have to assume that the witnesses and the evidence was vetted at several different levels. They're not looking to lose this case. If they thought they were going to lose it, they weren't going to bring it. But the problem is, when the case starts going and the attorneys start to cross-examine these witnesses, things happen and it gets out of control. And witnesses, things are brought up. And this is a very slippery slope. So I think from what I've read, Diddy's attorneys are making progress in challenging the credibility of these witnesses. But at the end of it, the question is going to be the totality of everything. If you're a jury, do you say, I've heard enough, and this witness may have not been credible, I might not have believed X, Y, and Z, but I've heard enough to render an opinion, this is what was happening. And the real issue here is whether or not these individuals, these females, were able to consent or not. If they were under the influence of drugs that were provided by him or others, they can't consent. You can't arguably consent to these acts if you are, you know, high on drugs and you're unable to make that consent. Or if you are afraid, if I don't consent, he's going to beat me, or he's going to ruin my career, he's going to blackmail me. Those are all things that preclude people from making, you know, being able to consent. So if a jury says, well, what was she supposed to do, right? What was she supposed to do? That's where he's going to have a problem. I would like to ask a question of the young ladies there, and Ra, you as well, all three of you. What are your thoughts when you're hearing this as a woman? And you're seeing what is being alleged here. Do you believe that these are victims of certainly domestic violence, perhaps, you know, other things? Or do you think this is because of his celebrity, because of other factors? What's your gut reaction when you see this and you hear it?
Well, I'll let the ladies speak for themselves. But for me, I'm okay with going on the record to say that I feel I cannot speak on Cassie, right? I can't speak on her experience in this relationship, but But I feel that the people that are coming forth in this case and saying that they were forced to do things were perfectly fine with the acts while it was happening. I feel like you are talking about people that are clout chasers, people who are opportunists, people who felt seen, people who were enjoying themselves. And now it's, oh shit, I'm going to jump on the bandwagon, whether it's that they want attention or they feel like there'll be a payout. I don't believe that anyone was forced. Now, keep in mind, before I let the lady speak, am I correct in saying that the sex trafficking charges were created for pimps in order to stop them?
That is correct. Correct.
Okay. Okay. So,
and what they're alleging here, how you tie that is a pimp. In the traditional sense, says, I'm going to make you do this. You're going to do this or else. And then women are forced into that because they have no choice. They're going to be assaulted or worse, right? And they're traveling across state lines, which makes it a federal offense. They are absolutely, and it's very interesting that you pointed that out. They're utilizing the same statute, the same criminal behavior. And what they're saying is, instead of you're doing this for a financial benefit, you're doing this for my own gratification, and I'm going to force you to do this. And if you don't do this, this is going to happen. That is exactly what they're charging him with. That is exactly what this case is about.
Okay, ladies.
So, but with sex trafficking, from my understanding, nobody gets to go home. You have to have sex throughout the states. Everybody goes home after this. Y'all get booked. Y'all fly out, have these freak-offs, and then you go home. That's not sex trafficking. Because if that's the case, we all been sex trafficked.
Mm.
You got it. Because if I come from Jacksonville to, say, Miami, and I get booked and come,
if I book you,
have a good time.
And you and I have a threesome,
yes,
with Silva.
No,
but I go
right
back home.
That's sex trafficking?
Well, no, that's what I think is interesting about it. Where, you know, like Donnell Rawlings does a hilarious joke where he's like, wait, flying a girl to another state and getting a hotel with the intent to have sex? He's like, he's like, I've been a sex trafficker. I've been flown. I mean, so like the question becomes too, if we're being honest with each other, when men are courting women, we generally want to pay for things. We're going to take you out to dinner. We're going to get a nice hotel. You want to get a massage. You want to go to this concert. Like we're doing all these things because we're nice, but can we be honest about what the intentions usually are between two adults? And a woman says, wow, I like this guy. And shoot, yeah, I want to go to Turks and Caicos and go on a yacht. But we have to be adults and understand when it's like consenting adults. So like to me, to your point, Ariel, like they went home. It's like, to me, sex trafficking sounds like you're being taken there and you're being put in a room and locked in there until it's time to use you again, in a sense, you know? But maybe these are, we think of sex trafficking in the worst senses. This is qualifies for enough to qualify, you know? I think that's what, you know, it's like, it's not a level 10 at all. This just seems like what all rich men do.
And they get paid. So at that point, are y'all prostitutes? Because if you can't get paid for sex, then if you buy me a Rolex, am I still a prostitute?
I mean, it's a looser form. You know what I mean?
Let me say this. I don't think that the federal government is looking to get involved in consensual relationships between adults. And if there's money exchange between adults or there's gifts exchange, I don't think the federal government is looking to prosecute those individuals. What's alleged here is very different. These women are saying that they were not willing participants, that they were afraid. But to Ra's point and to Ariel's point, some of the behavior would indicate differently. But that's the distinction here, that I don't think they're going to start criminalizing meeting someone and flying them to Miami or doing any of that. I don't think there's enough
Is that sex
in the country
trafficking
to start prosecuting those cases.
James, is that sex trafficking? If you meet somebody in New York and you fly them to Miami with the intent to get a hotel room with the two of you, your intent is to have sex. Is that sex trafficking?
No, that's not sex trafficking.
Then we don't have a case.
But the allegations is forced. Outside of it being forced, right, we are also dealing with people. We forget that when you get into environments, people's thought process. Me walking into a room with Diddy, I can't sing, I can't rap. But if Diddy about to sell me a dream, you putting me in a vulnerable state. And that's going, even though I can lay a floor and do some drywall, I can't do that. So you are targeting a weak side of me that would trigger something in me that wasn't there before I met Diddy.
But that's not fair.
That's not fair.
To charge somebody
based off of,
not you, not you, because this is not you. To charge somebody for you being, and I'd love to keep a professional journalistic delivery with this, but to charge somebody because you a weak ass bitch and you believe that just means you a sucker. Well, that's just what it is. You a sucker for love.
You
cannot convict someone because you believe the rap.
It's one thing to say you got a woman that's strong, she got money, she got her stuff going, got her stuff together, and you gonna walk in this room and say, I was forced to do something, but then I still went and laid in the bed with this man. That's where the line becomes blurred. Where it be forced, or are you dealing with somebody that's weak, and then even though it's something that they didn't want to do, they still turn around and point the finger at you because you convinced them to do something they didn't want to do?
But that's crazy, yeah, because as women, yourself as women, has a man never told you that he was going to do whatever he said he was going to do? And does that mean that because he didn't do whatever he said he was going to do, I get to now go to the law and say, he sex trafficked me. We flew to Miami. You know, he spent some money on me. We had a great time. And I thought that, is that fair?
Praying on the weak. But I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying charge this man.
I think that's crazy.
This is how, when you have somebody that was willing to do it and then they turn into a victim later. So what I'm saying is, you have somebody that's, I'm strong, now I'm weak, and now I'm ashamed of what I'm done. Now I become
right.
a victim.
Right.
That those different stages. Well, so right. it's like, yeah, she walking in. If you listen to her song, hey, the boys in would like to do what I do. Like, baby, you wrote a song saying come and get it.
Right.
But now you in the courtroom talking about, I didn't want y'all to come and get it. Diddy made me do it.
Well, here, an interesting thing about the Jane Doe testimony that we came out, we had a little break. And I don't want to sound like a pig-headed man. I love women. I don't want to sound, but the men were coming out and they're saying, well, in their logic, they're saying, Diddy just said, if she said, I don't want to have sex anymore with the other men, the prostitutes. And Diddy said, okay, but if you don't, then I'm not going to pay this $10,000 a month for your house. I'm not going to pay this car note anymore. I'm not going to give you 20 grand every once in a while for your money and your son and all this. And so people were thinking, well, like, yeah, he's into freaky shit. You were okay with it. You're not okay with it anymore. But should he still have to pay for your lifestyle because he's kind of breaking it off with you now?
Because you have a choice. That's what I mean. You have a choice
in
that case.
Fine. I don't want
Samson, James, you
okay,
can say,
fine. Yeah.
That's fine. I'll go back to what my life was before I met you. And that's
and
cool.
That's it. Yeah.
You don't have to do that because you want to live a certain lifestyle. That is a choice. And I want to make it clear that I am not, and I don't think any of us are, but I'm going to speak, of course, for myself. I'm not victim shaming the victim, right? I'm not.
Yeah.
That's not where I'm at with it. I'm just trying to say that what the actual charges are versus what we're hearing in terms of the details sounds like a woman, sounds like a female, right, that did not want to go back to life in a normal way, but that is not being forced.
Right.
That is not being forced. Guess what? I don't want to get up and go to work today. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to go.
Right.
Okay, I lose my job. Maybe now the mortgage is late. Now the car note is late. That's a choice that you made to say, I don't want to do this. And if you don't replace that source of income that you have locked in, which could have been if things would have worked out with her and Kid Cudi, maybe Kid Cudi would have, you know, taken care of some of her bills or whatever other guy that she dated, unless they were willing to replace him and his financial backing of her, that was a choice that she made to stay there. Doesn't mean that she you know, wanted to do everything that he was asking her to do. Maybe she sometimes just didn't feel like it, but that's not being forced in traffic from state to state.
Right, and you know, here's something too, I just wanna let people know. When you're in the courtroom and you're hearing this witness, this Jane Doe, she talks very, and we were there in Turks and Caicos and it was beautiful. We walked on the beach, we took Molly, it was bliss. So in the way everybody else is reading about it, but in hearing her describe it, it's not victim shaming, because the way she's describing it was that she was with it until after a while, she just didn't want to have sex with other men. But it wasn't in all of her testimony, she was just expressing how much she loves Sean. You know, it was so light, breathy, she wasn't crying on the stand. You know, it wasn't this. I don't want to sound like this, but I was waiting for, and then he assaulted me, and then this, but that never happened to her.
This case is probably the fifth case in a series of high profile individuals charged with various sexual offenses, starting with, we'll say, R. Kelly, right? The distinction with R. Kelly, that involved underage girls. These girls were under the age of 18, they can't consent to having sex with adults. Everybody knows that's wrong. Guilty. Jeffrey Epstein, another federal prosecution. Underage girls, same conduct. He never got to go to trial. He died before the trial, killed himself. You've got allegedly killed himself. Well, that's a whole other podcast. Yeah. You've got Harvey Weinstein. The difference with Harvey Weinstein is every one of these victims in that case said, this was not consensual sex. He raped me against my will. Bill Cosby, the same. This wasn't consensual. I was raped. This is different. This is not underage girls. So this is different than R. Kelly and Epstein. And none of these women, they're talking about having sex with others that he's watching and that he's paying for, and they're involved in these relationships. This is distinguishable from those other cases, and quite frankly, I think is a test case for the government. And the jury may reject this, and you may never see another case like this again. They might say, we got it wrong, right? Because this is what people do in their private lives. It's going to be very interesting to see how the jury responds to the government's case and if they reject it. And, you know, listen, to just to harp on that, one of the last times the federal government entered into the hip-hop world and prosecuted people in the hip-hop world, it was Irv Gotti and his brother. And they alleged that Murder, Inc. was a racketeering corrupt organization, and they charged them with all those crimes, and they were acquitted because the jury rejected it and said, no, you don't know the culture. You don't know the hip hop culture. This is how they run a record label, and they're friends with people that might have street ties. Back out. You don't know what you're talking about. Not guilty. This may ultimately be the same to say to Samson's point, look, there was sex, drugs, and rock and roll going on in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. This is what happens in the hip-hop culture. United States government, back off. You don't know what you're talking about. This is what it is. I'm not saying that it is or it isn't. That's going to be for the jurors to say. But it's going to be very interesting what they do say when they look at all of this in total. Do they criminalize this behavior or do they reject it? It's going to be very interesting.
Because every 70s rock band would be going down for the same charges. I mean, that's how 70s rock bands, Led Zeppelin, lived in that, you know, that they would destroy hotel rooms, you know, and all of this crazy behavior with underage women. And so you're kind of like, this is like par for, the, you know, and I'm not saying it's right, but it's just, and what about the Abercrombie and Fitch CEO? You know, how does that guy get to escape all this? Like, you don't hear anything about him.
Not even him. Why we didn't ever hear anything about Elvis Presley, right? And Hugh Hefner had a whole Playboy mansion.
And I want to point out.
He wasn't on trial at all. Right. And he got away with it.
He got away with
until
it
he died. So why didn't we hear?
Well, he didn't get charged. He got in there. He got
at
out.
All, well, at all. And but I think everybody else.
I think that's something that's important to be brought up, especially, you know, as a comedian, as a white comedian covering this case, that I want to be clear that I'm not here for the downfall of another black celebrity or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think we should be equal opportunists. You know, Kevin Spacey mm-hmm. has done a lot of shady stuff. Roman Polanski, you know, like you said, Ariel, just naming others. It's like we should be equal opportunists when it comes to people doing this. And like they were saying with the liquor company, they, you know, Puff found that they were targeting only black demographics, and he wanted them to give him national marketing. And that's when a lot of this stuff hit the fan, you know? So there is a lot of racism at play. And I agree. I think white celebrities, they get the benefit of the doubt in the public eye, where a black celebrity like Puff is really, it's a bit of a smear campaign happening.
What is the biggest difference between what's really happening versus what's being said online?
I mean, look no further than the most powerful man on the planet.
Strangulation marks and just bruises everywhere.
People only gonna listen to me while I'm standing next to him.
You know, I done been in a domestic violence situation, and it's easier said than done. Like,
one of the predicate acts of the racketeering conspiracy is that arson.
They're very strategic about who can be yelling at a witness, you know, and how that's perceived.
It's an absolute clown.